We're holding on page 128 in Titus, Ois Mem Zayin. We learned yesterday about how, at one point, Rav Huna, used the source of Rav Adar Bahava to prevent a building from collapsing. And Rav Adar Bahava objected to that because you don't stand in a place which is dangerous and expect that a nest is going to happen. Either a nest won't happen or schosim are going to be taken off. So now the Gemara wants to stress, don't think that Rav Huna was any slouch when it comes to schosim either. He also had tremendous schosim. But still, he figured that Rav Adar Bahava is great. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rav the Rach from Bar Papa, Le Malon Mar, Rebbe, would you tell us, Mehani Mili Mal Yusa, some of the wonderful things, some of the great things in Sidkus to have Ovid Rav Huna that Rav Huna used to do? Amalei, the Pashtus Rach from Bar Papa, was one of Rav Huna's Talmidim, so it was one of his close Talmidim, so he would be able to tell. Amalei, so he says, Bian Kose Lo Dechuna, things that he did when he was younger, I don't remember. But I remember things that he did when he was older. The Gemara, by the way, mentions in Murid Cotton that Rav Huna lived to be over 80 years old. So he had a long life, a long career. Rav Shura Goin also mentions in his Igeres, he was Rosh Hashiva there in Sura. He was the head Rosh Hashiva in Bavel, for particularly in the Yeshiva of Sura, for 40 years, and he was tremendously powerful. He was also well-connected, and so forth. So therefore, So the Kol Yerma De'iva, so Rafram says, on any cloudy day, Havu Makin Le Guharka De'Dahava, they would carry Rav Huna around the city in a Guharka made of gold. And actually explains that a Guharka is a litter. It's like when you have a seat that's attached to poles, and people carry the poles on their shoulders, and the person is sitting over there in the seat. Sometimes they have like an enclosure around it, Rashi describes that in his times, noble women in Germany would sit in such things and be carried around. So he'd be carried around in such a thing. The sire, why a golden one, we'll talk about soon. The sire of all the Kulam Masa, and he would go inspect all the buildings in the city. Whenever there was a shaky wall, this is the context over here in the Gemara, where the Mishnah had talked about walls that are collapsing, and where there's enough of them that it's an epidemic of collapses in the city, and therefore you have to fast and daven. But the Gemara had said, if the walls are anyway rickety, then you don't have to, because normal, they're going to fall down. But here, this actually connects with today's Daf Yomi as well, because it was something in a Mishnah there about where a person has, like that, a rickety wall, and Beis Din tells him it's time to tear it down before it causes a hezek, and they give him a certain grace period, and if he doesn't tear it down during that time, then he's chayev for any hezek it causes. Anyway, so any wall that was shaky, that was unstable, have a soso law. Rav Huna would tear it down, or he'd have servants tear it down. Im Eshalamara, if the owner of that wall had the financial means, Boni Law, then he would go rebuild it himself. The Im Law, and if the guy couldn't afford Boni Law Ihumidinafshe, then Rav Huna would pay for the reconstruction of the wall out of his own funds. But this way he makes sure that there are never any of these rickety walls over there that could collapse and injure or kill people. So what, that's Ben Yehoyada says, that's why he was going around in this golden litter. Why that gold? Not everybody in the city is Jews. There are Goyish landowners over there as well. They're not, Mela, the Jews, when Rav Huna is saying, I have to tear down the wall and reconstruct it, then fine, they're going to listen. The Goyim aren't going to necessarily, but when they see he's riding around in a golden carriage like that, then they're going to have a little derech eretz for him, and they're going to know they have to follow what he's saying. Why after a cloudy day? Because then it's more likely that it's going to rain, and there it's going to be rainy or windy, and it's more likely that such walls would collapse. V'chol panya demalish shabsa. Another thing Rav Huna would do is every erev Shabbos, when it was late in the day, having a shadow shlucha l'shuka, he would send a messenger to the market v'chol yarka to have a yatu v'ginai. Anytime the greengrocers had leftover vegetables, zabin lahu, he would buy them v'shodi lahu benara, and he would throw them into the river. Now, why would he do? Well, you have to ask about both things. Why is he buying up the surplus, and why is he throwing into the river? That the Gemara deals with over here. So the question is, once he's buying up the vegetables anyway, why not give them to the poor? By the way, as far as the walls, by the way, Marshall says that actually, no, if the wall was really shaky and was in danger of collapsing at any moment, then he wouldn't necessarily give the expenses, even if the guy was poor, to rebuild it, because actually you're talking about, in that case, really, he's doing better for the guy. The house could collapse on the owner of the house himself at any moment. We're talking about it's shaky, but it's like the one we learned yesterday, which was standing there for 13 years and had never yet collapsed. So that was the kind that Rav Huna would say, you know what, it might have to last a long time, but it might not. So therefore, since you're poor and you were putting it off because you figure it's lasted this long, it might continue, then fine, I'll do tzedakah for you and I'll rebuild it for you. Okay, so back to the vegetables. So the question is, why not give the vegetables to the poor people? Omar, because Rav Huna figured to himself, because then they may come to depend on it. And then they're not going to come by to begin with on Erev Shabbos, because they're going to figure there's going to be always leftovers and Rav Huna will give them to us for free. You want to give tzedakah, but you want to do it in a way that doesn't make people dependent. Okay, for the Shadula Behema, why doesn't Rav Huna give the leftover vegetables to animals to eat? He has his own animals, for example, he was rich. Now the Rif points out, you could say, well, then the owner of the animal is gonna think that then he's gonna depend on it, and then you're gonna have Tzar Bala Chaim. So he gives a reason why that's not a problem, but Ben Yehoyada says, never mind that. He could be giving it to his own animals. And he's gonna know that he can't depend on it, and therefore he has to still feed him anyway. Anyway, the answer is Sava. Rav Huna figured, Rav Huna holds the halacha, Michael Adam in Machil Noisel Behem. Food that can be eaten by people, you're not allowed to give to animals. Rashi says for two reasons. First of all, to be zoyin to food. It looks like you're kicking against and protesting against the good that Hashem gave and saying, I don't need it, I'm just going to give it to the animals. The other reason is to Torah chos amamon and Torah Yisrael. What about then on the face? The Torah is concerned about Jewish money, that it shouldn't be wasted. On the face of it, throwing it in the river is not any better. Rashi explains it's not, because the river is going to carry them downstream. They're not going to get sunk in the bottom of the river. They're vegetables. They're going to float. So therefore, they'll float someplace else, and the poor people there will pick it up and they'll eat it after all, so it won't go to waste. And you're not going to say that they're going to come to rely on it, because you never know. Obviously, the current is going to go every which way, and there's no dependability that they can get it, so therefore there's no problem that the people downstream are going to end up being dependent on it. By the way, this concept of Maisel Adam in Maisel Noisel Behema, most of the poskim don't bring it. The Magen Avraham brings it in Hilchos Sudah, but none of the other poskim do. The Alter Rebbe, we don't know, because there's some money I'm missing in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, so it seems like most poskim hold that the halacha is not necessarily like Rav Huna in that. Okay. What about Velo the Zabne Klal? Well, then why is Rav Huna buying it in the first place? Why not buy it at all? And the answer is Nimseta at the Machshilim Lasid Lavoi. That's going to cause the greengrocers are going to not want to do it in the future. They're going to say, why should we bother bringing vegetables to town to sell when we're going to be left with a surplus? Mela Rashi says if it's during the week, no problem. They can always sell them tomorrow. But if they have leftovers on Friday, they can't keep them till Sunday. They don't have refrigerators. So therefore, they end up spoiling. And therefore, they might hold back and say, we don't want to bring vegetables, or at least not so many, to begin with, to town on Erev Shabbos. And then people are not going to be able to buy good vegetables for Shabbos. So therefore, he wanted to encourage them to have a nice supply. The greengrocers have a nice supply, and therefore buy up the surplus, but on the other hand, not make the aniyim dependent on it. So that was another thing that Rav Huna would do. Another thing, Rafram Bapapa continues, Kad Havale Milsa Das Vasa, when Rav Huna had available some kind of medicine, have a Moli Kuza Demaya, he would fill up a jug full of Demaya, means of water, but actually, a different gear says Kuza Mine, he would fill up a jug of it. What good would water do at that point? It means he would fill up a jug with that medicine, Betoli the Besifa Debesa, and he would hang it by the threshold of his house, the Omar, and he would announce, hold it sorry for Deboy, Laisi Velishko, anybody who needs it, come and get it. So this way he was giving out medicine for free. Ikadamri, others say, Milsa de Shivsa have a gummer. Another explanation is rather that specifically he was familiar with the habits of Shivsa. Rashi explains, based on a Gemara in Yuma, that Shivsa is a shed that attacks people who eat without washing their hands, or eat bread without washing their hands. So he was familiar with the habits of that shed and how it's prone to attack people who don't do Netilas Yadayim. Now you have to remember, you know, for us, it's not a big chiddush. You go over to the sink and you fill up a cup of water and you wash until it's dying. Back then, you know, we had to get your water from the river or draw it from the river or from a well or whatever. It wasn't that easy for your average person to have water available on the spot. So he knew about that. So therefore have a gomer, so milsa shifts have a gomer, vamanach like koza de maya, so you take a jug of water, the toli lea ibrid of the dosha, and he would hang it by the bolt of the door, or a different version, vidoli lay, he would hang it up over there, but omer, and he would announce, kol mandat sarich leo velesu. Anybody who needs water to wash can come in and take kiehichet below the snack, and this way when they're eating, they won't come to sakana through that shed. And another thing, Rav Huna would do. He had a korich rifka when he was eating korich rifka, literally wrapping bread, because you know their bread was like pitas or tortillas or whatever. He would wrap it around the filling. So when he was eating a meal, have a posach ladasha. Rav Huna would open up the door of his house, but Omer, and he would announce kol mandat tzarich leisiv alecha, like we do by the seder. Anybody who needs, come and eat. Omar Rava, so now when Rava heard this whole report from Rasam Bar Papa, he says, Kulum asinim akayam. When it comes to all those things, I would be able to mekayim them as well. Rava was also rich, he was a Rosh Hashiva in his city, he would also be able to accomplish all these things, levar mehod lamaksin lamaba. With the exception of that last one, about inviting anybody to come and eat with him, that I wouldn't be able to do. Mishum den fishi bnei chela de mechuzah, because there are many bnei chela in mechuzah. Rashi does not have the word chela, he just has the word bnei mechuzah. There are many people in mechuzah, which is where Rava was the Rosh Hashiva. Rashi explains there are many poor people. So if I open my house every time and announce it and call the chvinyez of Yechel, they'll eat me out of the, they'll eat up everything I have. Marsha, on the other hand, has the girsa chela, and says that no, and besides which we find in various other places in Shas, that fakert, in mechuzah, the people on the whole were very rich. So no, what it means is, Marsha says bnei chela means the soldiers in the army. You have one of the amendments to the Constitution is you can't quarter troops in people's houses except during wartime. Well, they didn't have a third amendment to the Constitution. So any time the government could order you to quarter soldiers in your house and you have to supply them with food, there's a Gemara that's relevant to that in Beitza and other places. So therefore, Rava is saying, there are so many soldiers around here, and when I announce that my home is open to everybody to come and eat, they're all going to come and invade my house, and I don't have enough food to give to all of them. Further on, the Gemara continues talking about stories involving tzaddikim. Again, this is why this parak is called Pirkei Dechassidim, and also a story involving a rickety wall. Ilfa and Rav Yochanan have a garsi ba'uraisa. Ilfa and Rav Yochanan were learning Torah together. Dechikalu milsa tuva, they were in very dire straits. They were very poor. Omru, so they thought to themselves, Nekum v'nezel v'navad iska, let's get up and leave our full-time learning for a while, and we'll go start a business, unakayim b'nafshin, and with that, we'll be able to be makayim in ourselves. But the posit says, Efes ki lo yavcha evyen, the posit says, however, there will not be any poor people among you. Now, the simple meaning of the posit is that it's a promise. Hashem is saying, when you fulfill what the Eibishter wants, then there won't be any poor people among you. But the Gemara in Bava Metzia also understands, and Ilfa and Rabbi Yechanan also understood it to be at Sivoy, you should make sure that you yourself don't become poor. So they figured, in that case, we have a responsibility to do that. So Ozlu, sure enough, they went and to go engage in business. Isivu tuse gudereiya. One time they were sitting next to a rickety wall. Now they didn't know that it was rickety. If it is, they wouldn't have sat there. But they didn't know. But it wasn't stable. Habokukalchi rifka. They're sitting over there and wrapping their bread and eating. Also, tre malach asharis. Two malach asharis came along. Shame Rav Yochanan de Ka'ama Chad L'Chavrei. Rav Yochanan overhears the conversation between the Malachim. He hears one of them saying to the other, Nishdi Alayu Hayagudna. We should knock down this wall on these two. V'niktalinu. And we should kill them. Shemanichin Chaya Olam Abba V'Ostin L'Chaya Shah. They're abandoning the life of the world. Olam Abba is exactly what it means. Chaya Olam also means the Torah, like we say, davening v'chaya olam nata v'sechenu. So they're abandoning that, v'osim v'chaya shah, and they're involving themselves with temporary life in this world, with business. Why two malachim? Marsha says, just like we have, for example, you have the two malach asharis that accompany a person. One is defending him, and the other is accusing of him. To hear, so it's accusing Malach that's saying that we should do that. Omele Idach, the other one who's defending Malach, answers, Shavkinu, leave them alone, don't do that. There's one of these two where the hour is standing for him, meaning in other words, it's his time, Rashi explains. He's destined to become great, it's not his time to die yet. So it means, in other words, like the schus of his future talmidim will help protect him. Rabbi Yochanan shama ilfa lo shama. Now Rabbi Yochanan overheard that conversation between the malachim. Ilfa lo shama. Ilfa did not hear it, which means that it was meant for Rabbi Yochanan's ears. So Amale Rabbi Yochanan lo ilfa shama ma'amidi, but Rabbi Yochanan didn't know that, so he asks Ilfa, did you just hear anything? Amale loy, no. Omar, said Rabbi Yochanan, thinks to himself, midishami ano the ilfa lo shama. Since I heard this and Ilfa did not hear, shmamino v'didi kaima l'shaita. That means when the second malach said that there's one of them where kaima l'shaita, it's his lucky time and he's gonna become great, it must be me. It must be me that it's talking about. So Rabbi Yochanan didn't want to openly tell that to Ilfa. Instead, he tells him, Omale Rabbi Yochanan, ihadar, you know what, let me return. I'm going to return to full-time learning. The ikayim benafshoi, I will be makayim. Now, we first left because we were thinking of the pasuk lo yiyah b'chayevim. Instead, actually, I'm going to be makayim myself in a different pasuk. You have a different pasuk in the same parak. You have a few pasukim later. Ki lo yechdal evyan v'kerev ha'aretz. There will never cease to be poor people in the land. Meaning there's always going to be poor people among the Jews. So another one now. Simple meaning is Rashi explains on the Psukim, one is when Oisin with Sodi Shamakim, the other is not. The Rashba gives an explanation that one is when people are giving tzedakah and the other is not. Whatever the case, Rabbi Yochanan points out, the fact is you have a pasuk that implies that there are always going to be poor people. Fine, I'll be one of those poor people. I'm learning Torah full time. So Rabbi Yochanan Hodder, Ilfa Lai Hodder, sure enough, Rabbi Yochanan returned to the Beis Medrash, Ilfa did not. Ad osa Ilfa, by the time Ilfa returned, Molach Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan became the Rosh Hashiva. Molach means he became a king, and so in a few places in Shas, we have Rav Shira Goin regularly uses this expression in his Igeres, that when a person becomes a Rosh Hashiva, we use the word a Molach, and he becomes the king of Torah. It means also they give him money so that he becomes rich. By the Kohen Gadol, we find that he has a Gadlayu Mishal Achav, he's poor, then they have to enrich him. So the same way with Rosh Hashiva, they would do the same kind of thing. So therefore, we use the word Molach. Omruloi. So they told Ilfa, E Yosef Marv Goris, if you Rebbe, Ilfa, if you had sat here and continued to learn Torah full time, Loi have a Molech Mar, then the other Rebbe, meaning Rabbi Yochanan, would not have become the Rosh Hashiva. Because in other words, Ilfa was greater in Torah than Rabbi Yochanan, which is why at the beginning of the story we have Ilfa mentioned first. So they're telling him, you should know, you are really a greater Talmud, you're a Talmud Chacham of greater caliber than Rabbi Yochanan. It's too bad, you missed your opportunity. There's a couple of ways of understanding the phrase that they're saying. One is that it's a rhetorical question. E Yosef Mar Vigoris, if you had sat here and learned Loi Hava Molech Mar, wouldn't you, Rebbe, have become the Rosh Hashiva ahead of Rabbi Yochanan because you're greater than him than Torah? Or it can be a factual statement. If you had stayed here, then Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't have become the Rosh Hashiva, you would have instead. Well, Rabbi Ilfa wanted to demonstrate that his way is still correct. That the people shouldn't think like he went off the derech, people shouldn't think, whatever. So therefore he wanted to demonstrate that he still is great in knowledge of Torah. There was actually a very interesting explanation on this from Rabbi Reuven Margolis. He points out there's a medrash someplace that says that Rabbi Yochanan actually came from a family that had money. The medrash says how one time Rabbi Yochanan is walking with one of his talmidim, and they pass by this field and that vineyard and whatever, and Rabbi Yochanan, each one of them, he comments, this used to belong to me, and I sold it in order that I'm not busy with these kinds of things and I can learn Torah full time. So we see Rabbi Yochanan came from a family that had money. So therefore, When he decided, you know what, so to begin with, he and Ilfa were both poor, maybe his family wasn't supporting him, whatever it is, or maybe he'd voluntarily given up their support. Now, Rabbi Yochanan is thinking to himself, you know what, after all, I have what to fall back on. If I go back and learn Torah full time, I still have eventually my family can come and bail me out. Now, Shankin Ilfa may have been, to begin with, from a poor family, so he didn't think that he had that opportunity. But another way of looking at it is, so Ilfa may have figured, and look, it says in Pirkei Avos, Yofa Talmud Torah in Derech Eretz. So he may have figured this is the proper way to do things. So now he wants to demonstrate that his way of doing things is in fact correct. Also, Tolan Nafshe Be'iskalya Desfinta. So he went and leaned against. Tola can actually mean two things. It can mean leaned, or it can mean hanged. So it can mean either way. Iskalya means the mast, the sphinter of a ship. So he went to a ship, he climbed up the mast on it, and he polar would mean he was hang. It would mean that he polar would either mean that he's leaning against it, or it means that he suspended himself from it. Anyway, Omar, and he announced, if anybody can bring me something and ask me something from a braisa that Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia taught, and I can't clarify how this point is hinted at in a Mishnah, Nafilmim Iskariya, the Sphinx of a Tabina, then I will fall off the mast and I will drown. Meaning, what he means, I will drown, we'll talk about it in a second. A yid's obviously not allowed to commit suicide, so we'll get back to that in a second. But what he means is, in other words, like this. The Mishnah, we know, contains the basics of Torah Shabbat Peh. The Braises that were written afterward, that were composed by the Priya and Rav Oshia, they're not adding anything to the Mishnah. What they're doing, many times, you'll have something the Gemara will point out. You have a line or a phrase, you have a word or a line in a Mishnah from which we can deduce a certain din, and then a Braisa will spell it out more clearly. And Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia put together a collection of such reliable Braises, and that became what's printed in the back of every Masechta of the Gemara as the Tosefta. So therefore, Ilfa is telling us, the fact is, anything that says in the Tosefta is not something that Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia came up with on their own. In fact, the Gemara in a couple of places has the expression, "V'chi Rebbe lo shna, Rav Chiya minayin lo." If Rebbe didn't teach this concept, where would Rav Chiya know it from? So therefore, Ilfa is saying, I can actually show, if you bring me any braisa from Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia, I can demonstrate how a din that says in that braisa is actually hinted at in the Mishnah. Meaning that I have a total recall of all the Mishnayos and all the relevant halachas. So, and if not, if anybody can stump me with that, then he says, I'll fall off the mast and drown. So Poshet Pshat, of course, is like he's exaggerating, saying B'loshen Guzma, that he's so certain of himself. There is an interesting explanation. First of all, there's a Ben Yehoyada that gives an explanation. The name Ilfa itself is actually the Aramaic word for a ship. So he's saying, I myself am like the ship. I was going on ships and going in faraway places to earn my living, but you should know, I'm higher than the rest of the ship, just as the mast is. In fact, the rest of the ship can be makabel tumah, the mast cannot, because normally people don't climb up on it. So I'm actually on a higher level, and therefore I'm so certain of that, that I'm issuing this challenge to anybody. Another explanation is also, when he says I'll fall off and drown, he doesn't mean literally to drown, obviously a yid's not allowed to do that. He means fine, if anybody can stump me like that, then I will say, you know what, I agree, my derech of Yofa Talmud Torah and derech Eretz is wrong, and Rabbi Yochanan's was right after all, and fine, I'll abandon my business ventures, and I'll throw myself back into the sea of Torah full time. So, Osahu Sova, a certain old Talmud Chacham came, and there's a Tosfos in Cholin that says that maybe every time it says Ahu Sova refers to Eliyahu Hanavi, Tonalei, and he taught him, he quoted him the following Braisa, Haim, a Tnu Shekel of Onai, a case where a person before he passes away gives instruction about how much of his estate should be doled out weekly to his Yoshim, because he wants to make sure they don't fritter it all away. So when do we follow exactly what he says, and when do we not? The whole Braisa over there, and Ilfa ends up explaining to him that this is all hinted at, a whole din, that whole detailed braisa is all hinted at in a few words in a Mishnah where the mayor says mitzvah l'kayim divra mes, the mitzvah to fulfill the instructions of a mess. So he passed the test. He was able to show that such a braisa that has a whole detailed din that you're never going to find anywhere in a Mishnah is in fact hinted at in a few words of a Mishnah. More about rickety houses. The Gemara says, "Omru olam al nochumish gamzu, shayis sumu mi beiz einav nochumish gamzu," which we're going to have the story about him soon with the famous story with the chest of jewels. That story is much better known. This one maybe less so. This one is not really one that you can easily tell the little kids. Anyway, shayis sumu mi beiz einav. He was blind in both eyes. The given mishtei yodav, he was an amputee, both hands that had to be amputated. The kiteya mibeis vaglav, both his feet had to be amputated also. The whole gufa molishtin, and whatever was left of his body was covered with boils. Voya mutav abayas ra'ua, he's lying over there in bed in a shaky house. The legs of the dead were placed inside basins of water, so that ants don't fall on him, because since he doesn't have any hands or legs, he wouldn't be able to brush off any ants, so they had to make sure that ants don't get to him in the first place, so they had to have the legs of the bed in basins of water. So that's how bad off he was. It was in a very miserable situation. And again, so Pamachas, Hosemitosim Unachas Vaisrua. So again, his bed is one time in this rickety house, and his Talmidim are concerned that it may collapse on him. So the Talmidim wanted to take out the bed first with him on it, and then to clear out the furniture, get him out as soon as possible, and that way, in case the place collapses, worse comes to worse, we'll lose the furniture and the other things, but at least Nochum's life will be saved. Omalahem, so he tells them, similar to the story we had before with Rav Ada Bar Abba, Bonai, Panuas HaKelim, no, he says, my Talmidim, first clear away the furniture, V'achakach Panuas Mitosi, then you can take out my bed, Shemuf Dachochem, you can be guaranteed, Kol Zman Shani B'Bayis, as long as I am inside this building, Ein HaBayis Noifo, the house won't collapse on me. He knew that he's the level, he knew that he's on the level of a Tzadik Gomer, where, like we learned yesterday, he's beyond the usual rules of Teva, and therefore the house is definitely going to stay standing as long as he's in there. So sure enough, they cleared out the furniture and the other things. The last thing was they took out his bed. And sure enough, only then the house collapsed. Well, if you're on the level of a tzaddik gomer, lama also lachokach, then why did you end up in this situation? Tzaddik gomer should be tzaddik v'toyva, he has all good in this world, even going to have little yisurim, fine, but not to the extent that you're having. What happened? Omalahem, so he tells them, bonai ani goramti la'atzmi. I caused it for myself. What happened was, shapam achas yisim ahalach l'derech l'veis chomi. One time I was traveling on the road to go to my father-in-law's house, v'hoyoim im masiv gimo chamorim. I had with me three donkeys loaded up with things. The pastor's present that he's going to be giving to his kala and his azimuchotonim and all. Echad shom Michael, one was loaded up with food. The echad shom Mishta, one with drinks. The echad shom minim agodim, and another one with all kinds of delicacies. But oni echad ba'amali ba'der. A poor person came and stood in my path in the road. Ba'amali Rebbe panaseni. He says, Rebbe, please feed me. I told him, Hamten, at she'efrik min hachamer. Wait until I unload the packages from the donkey, and then I can give you something. I didn't even have the chance to unload the donkey, and the guy passed away. He was like literally on his last legs, and Nochum hadn't realized that. Ben Yehoyada suggests that maybe the guy was suffering from a disease that we talked about in Yuma called bulmus, which is where a person has it. So whether it's low blood sugar or whatever it is based on the symptoms, the Gemara says over there, like a person needs to eat immediately, otherwise his life is in danger, and that was this guy's situation. So halachti v'naftalti al ponav, I went and fell on his face in grief of Amarti, and I said, you know what, I should have acted faster. I should have, for example, instead of waiting to unload the donkey, I should have just ripped open one of the packages and right away given him something. So instead he says, Einai shalechosu aleinecha, my eyes that did not have rachmanos on your eyes, yisoymu, deserve to become blind. Now, in other words, the point is, Maushal says, when he says, ani goramti la'atzmi, he says, fine, I might have been high of some kind of oynish for that, but not necessarily to this degree, where I'm blind and amputated and so forth. This is, I caused it for myself by accepting on myself much more yisurim than by rights I should deserve. So I said, yeah, my eyes deserve to become blinded. Yodai shalechosu al yodecha, my hands, which did not have rachmanus on your hands, yisgadmu, deserve to be chopped off. Ragla shalechosu al galacha yiskatu, the same thing with my feet. And I still, I didn't even calm down. I was thinking to myself, there has to be more than that. Ad shamarti, until I said, kogufi yehim molishin, not just my hands and feet and eyes, but even my whole body should be covered with boils. Omruloi, so they told him, oilonu should be nuchabakan. Woe to us that we had to see you in such a condition, that we have to see you suffering from all of that. Marshall refers to a Gemara in Moed Cotton that says that we should think to it when we see Yisurim that come to a tzaddik, when we see that a tzaddik passed away, we should think to himself, if even such great people had such things happen to them, imagine how much us lesser mortals. So therefore, oyvei, that we're seeing such a thing, we should be terrified that and even worse might happen to us on our level. He tells them on the contrary, It would have been bad for me if you hadn't seen me this way, if I hadn't received my onus in this world like this. I got everything and more that I needed in this world. So therefore, fakir, it's good that it's good that you're seeing, it's good that you see me in this situation. Ion Yaakov adds the point, before he had said he wasn't afraid the house is going to collapse on him. For the house to collapse on him would be a form of skila, which is the harshest of all the Dalet Nisus facing. He realized as a result of his Yisurim, the Avera has been, the minor Avera that he did, has been cleaned up to the point where he's certainly not going to be Chayiv Skila, which is why he could rely on his own Schosim, unlike Rav Adar Ba'ava that we learned about yesterday, that didn't like the idea that they're putting him in a dangerous place. Nochum realized in order for that to happen, it would have to be, I'd be Chayiv on some level Skila, and I'm not going to be after all these Yisurim that I went. So the Gemara says, "Amai Korele Nochum Mishaganzu." So why does he have that name? Now, there is actually an interesting explanation that the simple reason he was called that, there's a city in Eretz Yisrael that's mentioned in Divrei Hayomim called Gimzoi. So the simple meaning is that he came from the city of Gimzoi, and therefore they called him Nochemish Gimzoi, just like you have Yosef and Yehazi Ish Tzreda, and Yosef and Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim, and so forth. But the point is, they took the name Gimzoi and altered it to Gamzu, because they called Milsad, have a Salkalei. Whenever anything that happened to him that seemed like a negative thing, Omer Gamzu L'Tov, he would say, this too is for the good. Even though it seems negative. So what happened? A story that illustrates that. One time the Jews needed to send a gift to the emperor to get him to back off on them. Omru man Yezel, so they thought to themselves, who should go and bring it? They figured, Yezel Nochemish Gamzu to Malumad Benissim. We should send Nochemish Gamzu because he's accustomed to having Nissim happen. So they sent with him a chest full of precious stones and pearls as a gift for the emperor. He went and stayed over on the way, stayed over in a particular inn. During the night, the people who lived in the innkeepers got up. They realized what was in the chest. They took the chest and emptied out all the jewels, and they filled it up with dust. In a different version of the stories, they asked him what's in there, and he told them whatever the case. The point is that they realized what happened, and they filled it up with dust. L'mocho, because you know I'm a gamzul l'toyva. When he sees it the next day, he says gamzul l'toyva. Now that's in parenthesis because it's not so simple. Does that mean he's going to actually go to the kaser with a chest full of dust, not knowing what's going to happen, and possibly putting all the Jews in danger? So a different way of understanding it without that parenthesis is he actually didn't know what happened, and he gets there, and only when they open it up in the palace does he discover what happened. Anyway, Kimata Hassan, when he got there, Sharino Lasifta, they opened up the chest, Chazino de Mola Afra, and they saw that it's full of dust. Bom Malka Litalino Lakulu, the king was about to kill all the Jews. Omar, he says, Kamachaifu bi Yehudari, they're making fun of me, they're sending me as a gift a chest of dirt. Omar Gamzul the Toiva, still Nochem said Gamzul the Toiva, the Eishne has a way everything will work out for the good. Also, Eliyahu idmilek achodeminayu. Eliyahu came along and appeared to the Romans as one of them, as a Roman senator or what have you. Omele, he says to the emperor, Duma ha'afra ma'afra d'Avram avuanu. Maybe this dust is not stam dust. Maybe it's dust from their ancestor Avram. To have a shabi afra when he was fighting against the four kings in Parshas Lech Lecha, when he would throw dust, have a saifi, then a nest would happen, and the dust that he threw would turn into swords. Gili, and he would throw pieces of straw, have a giri and bederach nest, they would become arrows. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, yitin ka'ofer charbay, Hashem makes like the dust his sword, tekash nidach kashtay, like the wind-blown straw is his bow. So it actually means, the Medrash actually says in both ways, it means that when they would shoot arrows and spears at him, those would turn into dust and then straw. And meanwhile, it means the other way around also. When Avraham would throw his at them, then it would turn into spears and arrows. So Eliyahu, in the guise of a woman, is telling them maybe that's what's going on over here. It's not stam dust. At that point, there was one particular province where they were trying to conquer it and they weren't able to. Bodkumine, so they tested out the dirt that was in the box, the Kavshua, and sure enough they were able to conquer it. I lul of Beginze, so they took Nochum and Shiganzu into the royal treasury. Umaluhu the Sifti Abonim Tervis Margolius, they filled up the chest with precious stones and pearls, Vishadrua Biakoda Rabba, and they sent him away with great honor. Which Ben Yehoyada says the great honor also includes they sent with him a contingent of armed soldiers so that the innkeepers don't try the same thing again. Ki Osa, when he was coming back on the way, Bisu Bahu Diura, they stayed in the same inn. Omule Mai Isis Bado. So they ask him, what'd you bring with you? He kind of plays dumb. My deshakli mahocha, I'm filahosam. Whatever I took from here is what I brought there. So they realize, wait a minute, he brought dirt from here and he got rewarded so richly for it. Means that our dirt is something special. Sosru the didayu, they tore down their inn, their house. Vamtino the beimalka, and they brought all of the dust to the palace, to the royal palace. Meaning, so now in other words, they lost out for themselves. Not only did they just dig up the dirt around there, they lost their house as well. The dirt that was brought to you before me, it actually came from us. But of course, they tried it out. I understand it didn't work. It was stam dirt. So they executed those innkeepers for their chutzpah in bringing fake dirt to the king.
That's
a true definition of a goyish cup. That's true, yeah. Ion Yaakov points out a detail in it. You know, when you get down to it, precious stones and pearls, I mean, the emperor's got treasuries full of them, how much would it mean to him? But you bring him this special dirt, which works as spears and arrows, that's going to be something special. Once he realizes what it is, he would realize that taka is a very great gift. So Nochum had good reason to say, Gamzul Batova, that it worked out, that Eidosh made it work out better than what we planned originally. Originally, we would have brought him just precious stones. He would have said, okay, Eidosh made more precious stones. But like this, you bring him something that he would really sit up and take notice. So the Zeno, whatever Zeno is trying to do, I guess with Bato, yeah. There's a sticker, by the way, that ever talks about the idea behind, we find over here that Nochum would say Gamzu Latova, as opposed to the Akiva, who was his Talmud and learned this Mahalach with him, would say the expression in Aramaic, Koma de Obed Rachmana, the Tab Obed, everything that Hashem does, he does for the good. And there's a sticker in one of the Uri Chalok and Chedek Alok and Chedek Days, where it ever analyzes the difference being, Nochum lived when the Beis Mikdash was still standing, so of course is more visible in the world, therefore he could say his expression in Lashon Kodesh, as opposed to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was born when the Beis Mikdash was still standing, but most of his career is after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, so therefore things are on a lower level, and therefore he has to express the same thing in Aramaic, which is like a degraded form of Lashon Kodesh. All right. Chazal tell us that Mashiach bo behesach hadas. That Mashiach is going to come like when we're not paying attention. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't contradict the fact that we're still thinking into and we have a das and we're connecting our das. Das, as the Alter Rebbe defines in Tanya, is that you bind your thoughts very strongly to something. We're very strongly binding our thoughts. See, in Yoni Mashiach Gola, how does that fit with this hesach hadas? And it means that we think and we contemplate and we realize that we're already at the entrance to Yemos Mashiach and Hinei Zeboh, all the kolokol kitzin, all the kitzin are over, we've already done shuvah and finished all the avodah. So how does all this fit with Hesach Hadas? Because Hesach Hadas actually means l'mayim of Hadas, the Alter Rebbe explains. So not that we're ignoring it, but on the contrary, it's on a level higher than Das. After this concept of Mashiach has permeated a person's das, he thought about it, and he contemplated it, and he understands it, and so forth, it becomes already a hesach hadas, it becomes even higher than das by him. And that's the level at which Mashiach comes.
That's because Mashiach is a
ma'ilah
from the das.
Mashiach is a ma'ilah from das also, yeah. Continuing on the four Rishuris of Shabbos, so we've talked about Rishus Yochid, Rishus Rabim, and Parmelis. And then you have a Mokum Petur, which is an area in Rosh Hashanah, a small area, less than 4x4 Tvachim, at least 3 Tvachim tall, because if it's less than 3 Tvachim, then it just counts as part of Rosh Hashanah. Similarly, a pit that's less than that size and is at least 3 Tvachim deep, and other things like that, these kinds of things are a Mokum Petur when they're in Rosh Hashanah. If they're in Karmelis, then they still count as Karmelis, and if they're 10 Tvachim tall, then they count as Mokum Petur. So now then they count as makom p'tur. Now makom p'tur, you are actually allowed to transfer things from it to Rishas HaRabim or Rishas HaYachid. However, you do have to be careful not to, for example, you can't use it as an in-between thing. You can't take something from Rishas HaYachid, for example, put in a makom p'tur, and then pick it up from there and put it in Rishas HaRabim, or vice versa. Midar Raisa, it wouldn't be a malacha, but midar Abanan, it's still also to do. Okay. Yeah.